Good. Hello. Thank you, everybody. I'm Richard, and I'm here to talk to you about what I think is the best thing since sliced bread. A little bit about myself first, because this is actually my first All Systems Go, despite like watching as many recordings as I can for the years. I've been doing this distro stuff for like 20 years now, as a user, working as SUSE for 10, QA engineer, distro release manager, tumbleweed, OpenSUSE board member, OpenSUSE chair, and these days I'm a distribution architect at SUSE, mostly looking at rolling and mutable stuff. And I created this thing called OpenSUSE Aeon, formerly known as the MicroS Desktop. So I've got a lot I want to cover in 40 minutes, so I'm going to try and be sort of broad and deep and leave time for questions. So if I shoot through some stuff a bit too fast, don't worry, I'll try and leave room at the end so we can go back. Going to explain a little bit about MicroS in general, given that's where we started and Aeon was born from that, and explain sort of the mindset and how that's different from regular distros. Then a little bit about Aeon, how that uses Flatpak and Flathub, how that uses DistroBox, how that uses transactional update to do all of its fancy update stuff. And then at the end, it's an endless list of all of the stuff I wish I had more time to work on and the stuff that I would love to have more help with. And that list got longer and longer yesterday and the day before because conversations happened around it. So why did we build OpenSUSE MicroS? To overly simplify it, you know, Linux is awesome, right? You know, it's great. It's this wonderful customizable platform where anybody can just tinker with it and do whatever the heck they want, and it can do everything. It's multi-purpose and it's reliable. Well, no, it's not. Like, all of those things that are traditional strengths of Linux are also, like, the biggest Achilles heel. You know, it's so customizable, everything always ends up being untested, untestable, weird combinations of random packages that nobody ever expected to run together. And yet everybody always expects everything to always work together, even when it's running as a server, or as a VM, or as a desktop, even though those are totally different use cases, although people try and do them all at the same time on some machines. And then it's all reliable until, you know, some update hits your system while it's running, while you're doing something, and the whole thing explodes. And so, you know, really with MicroS, we kind of started, you know, a little bit with this. It's a bit extra controversial, but, you know, Linux is not about choice. You know, engineering is about making good engineering decisions and making the right choice for the user. You know, it's a hard job. Not all opinions are right, not all decisions are right, but, you know, being opinionated and making the right choice for what you believe to be the right choice for the user is what I think we should be doing when we are building operating systems, when we are building software, especially when it's open source, because if someone disagrees with you, they can fork it and do it how they think it should be done anyway. So with MicroS, we have a server operating system out there that is predictable. It does not get modified at runtime. It is read-only, it boots, and it will stay in that state until the next boot. It can run whatever workload you want. It can, you know, it's perfect for containers, it's perfect for VMs, it's perfect especially for like that one thing you want to run on, so some embedded use case. And it will just keep running that same workload the same way on every single boot. It's scalable because, you know, it's meant to be the same every time. You don't have to configure all the different systems at runtime. You know, the idea is you just set it, you forget it, it boots, it's done. Like I said, typically the perfect use cases are those kind of single purpose ones where, you know, it's just going to sit there doing one job. Of course, that one job could be running hundreds of containers. But, you know, from an operating system point of view, it's just there to run a task. And then the most important part, doing all of that in an incredibly reliable way, having our transactional update stack, which I talk more about later, where all updates can be fully automated. The update happens automatically. The reboot happens automatically based on whatever procedures you want. Like, for example, if you're running a Kubernetes cluster, the cluster decides when to reboot it. And then actually have the thing check itself on the next boot. Did the thing boot properly? Is this behaving right? Did all the services start properly? And if not, automatically rolling itself back to the last known good state that did actually work. So, you know, even if an update isn't perfect, who cares, you've just wasted a reboot, life is good, the next boot will be fine. So all of this is based on OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, so the rolling release which we've been doing in SUSE for about 10 years or longer now. All the same bits at the bottom there. In my view, it is the perfect community server operating system. You know, it's what I use for myself. I would never use anything more stable because it isn't actually more stable. I don't use Leap. I don't use CentOS. This is the most reliable way of me running all of my stuff. And in SUSE land, where we have a new family of products called ALP, some of those ALP products are inspired by what we have done and what we have been doing in MicroS for a couple of years now. And that's all great for servers, but then I came along and I was like, I want my desktop to have all this wonderful stuff as well. And desktops are special. You know, you can't just automate a whole bunch of those problems away. You know, this isn't a bit of cattle that you can just destroy a node and redeploy it. This is your laptop. You're going to be touching it. It's always going to be a little bit of a pet. And, you know, they've got to be working from that first boot. You know, you don't want to be spending a whole bunch of time messing around with it to get it up and running. Well, you might want to, but if you do, you're probably a distro engineer, in which case you're going to just use whatever the heck you want anyway. If you're a normal human being, you want it to be working just from the first time. And, you know, you need it to be as reliable, if not more reliable, than any server OS. You know, you can't work on a server if your desktop's broken, you know. So it really has to be a case of stable, reliable, working, all that other stuff, but yeah, and not dying at any random point. So this was introducing the MicroS desktop, and I just realized when I renamed it, I didn't get rid of the, but introducing OpenSUSE Aeon, formerly known as a MicroS desktop. It's got all the core attributes of MicroS. So, you know, the same reliability approach, the same engineering underneath it. It's predictable, it's immutable, it does the rollbacks, but in a slightly different way. It's opinionated, really opinionated. You know, I only support GNOME because I think GNOME is the best desktop out there. And it's also the one that leans itself nicest to technologies like Flatpak and FlatHub and the like. I would describe it more sort of Chromebook-like than, you know, a full-fledged Tumbleweed-like arrangement. You know, I'm trying my best to get it working fine out of the box, and it looks good, but you shouldn't have to go messing around with which packages are in the base OS. If you do, use Tumbleweed. It's perfectly fine for that. So it's less customizable because we've got the customizable options in Tumbleweed. It's small, but I'm not aiming for it to be this small, super tiny, less than 1 gig installation. You know, everything should be working right out of the box. Printing, gaming, media production. Someone just reported that WebP wasn't working properly in the installation, so I missed a codec. But all of that should work right out of the box. And yeah, you shouldn't need to have any additional configuration to get it to work. In my view, it is the best Linux desktop. It's what this presentation's running on. Or at least it will be. Like, it's not perfect yet. It's been in kind of release candidate stage for a year, and after discovering everything I now want to do, it's probably going to stay in release candidate year for another year. Or I'm just going to release it and not quite have everything finished, because, yeah, I admit I'm being a bit of a perfectionist with it. But, yeah, like I say, that's my laptop's wallpaper. This is what I'm running. The design is probably a little bit too small to see on the slide, but it's basically arranged like this. At the bottom, we've got a blinker that doesn't want to blink, or really nice shiny screen, so forget that. The MicroOS base. On top of that, we have the standard GNOME packaging from Tumbleweed, with a few extra tweaks and tunings from myself. All graphical applications should be Flatpaks, not repackaged weird ones from OpenSUSE, but the ones from FlatHub, which the rest of the community is working on. And then for stuff that isn't a Flatpak, so basically command line applications or, you know, your development environments, we've got DistroBox, which I talk about in much more detail in a minute. And of course, DistroBox has this awesome feature where you can actually export graphical RPM or applications that are packaged as a package in that distro into your graphical environment also. So that's also my get out of jail free clause for anybody who wants to run a graphical application that isn't in Flatpak. Yeah, like just export it and you've got a graphical app there too. So in plain English, everything you're running on Aeon should be isolated from the base system. You know, graphical applications being Flatpaks ideally, or exported from DistroBox, command line applications, your development environments, all running in DistroBoxes. If you absolutely want to, you know, we do have the transactional update stack, so you still can install classical stuff and mess with the base system and tweak and tune it and make your life more complicated. It's there, it's an option. It's a great source of bug reports, and I might not fix them all. But if it works for you, it's great. So for anybody who doesn't know, Flatpak is the best way of doing containerized applications for graphic applications on Linux. And yes, I know there's somebody from Canonical here who does snaps, but sorry. You know, it's there, it works. It's built for every distro. It's contained the same way on every distro. So it's not like snaps where it's more secure in Ubuntu than anywhere else. The runtime's behind there, so you've got this concept of common runtime, so all KDE applications are built using the same runtime, free desktop applications the same way, GNOME, etc. They are all wonderfully maintained, kept after, CVE fix is done quickly, so you know they're all basically mini distros on their own right now, but that does a very good job of centralizing the effort for desktop applications, which we have to be honest here, there's less people working on desktop applications than there used to be, so it's more sustainable than expecting every single distro to do a wonderful job in every single stack. And the screen just went black. That's weird. There we go. And yes, all Flatpaks run in their own sandbox, all run rootless by default, and in fact on Aeon right now they even install rootless, so they're installing in your home directory, not installing system-wide like they do on most distributions. We get all of our Flatpaks from FlatHub. Like I said, unlike other distros, we don't build our own. So FlatHub is this vendor-neutral Flatpak app store. You've got thousands of applications there. It also makes my life easier when it comes to some legal issues of things like codecs, because OpenSUSE historically had a very strict policy with codecs, but I don't have to worry about that when FlatHub is taking care of that and bundling the codecs in their applications. So that's awfully nice. And more and more of these Flatpaks are maintained upstream. And I have no idea where the presentation has gone, but I will just keep on talking. Technology is wonderful. Yes, so in the case of Aeon, that's all integrated wonderfully in the desktop environment. I'm going to spin my laptop around. All good. We've got it configured straight away with GNOME software straight out of the box. So you get a very vanilla, empty GNOME desktop. But the software icon is just sitting there in the dark. You click that, it's already populated with all the metadata from FlatHub. All good. We've got a backup. Good. I don't install that many applications by default. But things like the browser is coming from FlatHub now. I think I install a calculator and builder just to kind of show what's there. And of course they all auto-update themselves. That looks good. Thank you. And yes, unlike the base OS, GNOME software can be configured, so it is configured out of the box for us to auto-update, so most of the time your GNOME software list looks like that. And when you're installing your own applications, you get lots of nice metadata from FlatHub, like here, how much space is actually being used, because everybody worries about containerized applications, about wasting too much space. But this FlatHub model where everybody is using the same runtimes more and more, your typical application is going to use tiny amounts. Yes, you've got a little bit of waste with the additional runtime there, but then in Aeon, I'm not installing as much of that as on the host as I can anyway, so it would be the same as if you installed it on a regular distro in most cases. That's the graphical stuff. On the command line side, we use DistroBox. DistroBox was sort of inspired by Toolbox that you might have seen in Fedora CoreOS land or MicroOS. We still use that there. And in those cases, you know, you're typically using it as a debugging read-write environment on your read-only host, so you have some way of, you know, installing your debugging tools and just getting on with stuff. DistroBox takes that idea and then just kind of keeps on running with it, so really trying to have a nice read-write interactive, you know, developer or, yeah, advanced user playing on their host in whatever distribution that they want, all integrated nicely, therefore escaping the container for things like being able to run graphical applications on the host. It's using standard Podman and Docker and OCI containers. What it typically would do is actually download like the standard vanilla OCI container of distro of your choice. And then the first time you run it in DistroBox, it installs a whole bunch of extra stuff and messes with the config and gets all that integrated nicely. Does things like sharing your home directory, so it looks like it's your regular home, external storage, USB devices, audio, graphical stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In Aeon, we've taken that and gone a bit further too, so all of that stuff about the first run, it's already done, our container's already built exactly the way DistroBox likes it, so all you would have to do is just fire up DistroBox. Because, you know, if you download Aeon and then you decide that you don't like VI like me and you want to have Nano, as an example, this actually was like the first bug report with the MicroS desktop, was where's Nano? You know, you can't just do zipper in Nano because it's a read-only root file system, zipper will just say go away, but you can run DistroBox enter, that's going to quickly download our DistroBox tumbleweed container, and then you can run zip it in Nano, just like you would on a traditional old-fashioned tumbleweed system, or whatever distro you want, and then there's your Nano. Nice and simple. You can then, of course, if you're into really having a nice reproducible environment, take this one step further and like use that DistroBox container as your base for creating your own dev environments. You know, so for example, with me, packaging, I started by taking that and then, you know, adding all of the SUSE, Git, OBS, OCI tooling, so I can have everything that I need, yeah, as a packager, as a release manager. And yeah, if I have to reinstall my machine or throw the container away, doesn't matter, I can get back up and running just by running DistroBox with a fresh new container. It's also like the perfect way of handling, you know, multiple different Python versions, multiple different Ruby versions. I believe our Go maintainer at SUSE is doing this, so we can, yeah, have nice clean room environments of all of his different Go builds and then produce everything that he wants and then spit it out without messing up his machine. And you can even go as far as kind of making it the default shell in GNOME Terminal just by having DistroBox enter as the shell command in your GNOME Terminal config. In fact, I've gone even further, and I have three different shortcut keys that load up three different versions now. Because, for example, like I mentioned with packaging, that container I made for SUSE packages is now a generic container any SUSE packager can use. So you get a perfect working environment with all the tools you need to do that. So as an example, creating a DistroBox from a container like that, it's a simple case of running DistroBox create. In the case of this, you might want to run it as root, because if you're building for OBS or building locally instead of building on the OBS directly, then you need to do a bunch of fancy VM stuff, and therefore you need to do it as root. If you're not going to be doing local builds from the OpenSUSE build service, then you can actually drop that and run the entire thing rootless. And yeah, that creates the container, and then DistroBox enter whatever you called the thing, and there you go. DistroBox export, nice, simple addition where you can then put whatever graphical application you want from whatever distro you want, install it in there, so Zipper, apt, whatever. And then based on the app name inside the container, you just run distrobox export the app name, and then a desktop icon is going to appear in your GNOME session that looks like it normally would, with the right icon it normally would, and whenever you click that, it's just going to load up the distrobox and run the container, and you'd never know. And in fact, there's a patch now that it will show you the shortcut with the name of the container it's running from, because yeah, we've had crazy people run like 20 different Firefoxes from 20 different distros because they felt like it, and then you didn't know which one you were clicking on. So you can at least see which container the shortcut's coming from now. But besides that, it looks a perfectly normal shortcut and acts almost perfectly natively. Transactional update. So away from the graphical stuff and away from how you should be playing with your Aeon system, you know, we have this update stack sitting underneath the entire thing, making sure that all the base OS packages are updated atomically. So, you know, the entire update set happens or nothing happens to your machine. All of that gets applied without impacting the running system. I don't have the slides going into great detail about that. Ludwig had it in his talk earlier. But basically, we use BTRFS snapshots. We make a snapshot. All of the package applications happen to that snapshot, so the running system never notices what's going on. The snapshot gets everything that wants to change. If anything goes wrong during there that gets detected by the package manager, by the packages, by the scriptlets, whatever, anything remotely anomalous, dependency issues, whatever, the entire snapshot gets thrown away, so nothing happens. If everything has worked out okay, then that snapshot gets flagged as the next boot target. So you boot into that snapshot on the next reboot. In the future, that also includes the next soft reboot if you're using systemd soft reboot. Our transactional update developer is going to start working on that when he's back from vacation. And in Aeon, we do all of that in a fully automated way. So the update happens in the background, all the checks happen in the background. The reboot doesn't happen in the background because you really don't want your desktop rebooting randomly during the day. And so you get a notification saying, you know, your update is ready. Please reboot whenever the heck you feel like it. And if you keep your machine running for a couple of days, then you're just going to get the latest update set and the other ones will be discarded and cleaned up because you didn't need them. This all happens using the standard systemd daily flag. So happens at midnight or randomized up to 2 hours after midnight. And so if your laptop isn't running at that point, it'll happen between 0 to 2 hours after your next reboot. We don't want it happening as soon as you boot up because your system's kind of busy as soon as it boots up and you probably wanted to use your laptop. So yeah, unlike MicroOS where there's a scheduled reboot, Aeon does not do that at all. If you want to use transactional update to mess with the base OS, then that's how you do it. It's not exactly the shortest command line string for messing with the package manager, but perfectly functional. You know, pkg in for whatever package you want, pkg rm for whatever package you want. Those commands use the same flags as they would with Zipper. So if you're used to doing fancy stuff like Zipper rm minus u, that works perfectly fine with that too. And if you want to go really fancy and make really weird and wonderful changes, you can use transactional update run to run whatever command you want in that next snapshot for that next boot. So you can run whatever random third-party scripts, whatever. There is also a transactional update shell command, which I don't put on slides because everybody then messes with their system in horrific ways, but it's there for debugging and that kind of thing too. And of course, with any one of these combinations, run the way documented there, it's going to make a fresh snapshot every single time. There is therefore a minus minus continue flag, which basically lets you, run one command and that makes a snapshot. Continue will then enter that snapshot that you've just made, and you can do a second thing and a third thing and a fourth thing, because you don't necessarily always want to just do one thing. But possibly that's going to, you know, make your system a little bit less stable, and I'm working on tooling for Aeon to actually kind of track, you know, how much divergence has this Aeon desktop had from the main image. So when people file bug reports, I want to start having that metadata to play with and, you know, decide how to prioritize the bug accordingly so I don't run around because someone's just messed with their machine way too much. And if they do mess with their machine way too much, it's really easy for them to fix it themselves anyway, because all you have to do is transactional update rollback, and it's going to roll back to the last good system that worked. Potentially, you know, if you want to really run back to a bunch of different snapshots, you know, maybe you've been tinkering with a whole bunch of stuff, we've got our snapper tool to list all of the snapshots, and then you can roll back to a specific snapshot. And then, in the future, ideally, I want Aeon to be like the perfect desktop for everybody at All Systems Go. Like, you know, you guys hear what we're working on, the way we're doing things with systemd and the like. I really want Aeon to showcase as much of that as possible in the Linux desktop space. So, systemd boot, I definitely desperately want it. Systemd homed, I have got more gray hairs because of that now. Trusted boot, measured boot, you know, verification, IMA, EVA, and analyzing the system. Image-based deployment, of course, and faster boot times. In the case of systemd boot, it's already, because Ludwig's done almost all the work in the OpenSUSE ecosystem anyway, he was talking about it. There's a few things that, you know, he was talking about, of like getting rid of his SD boot util thing, so we don't have to have our weird downstream scripting, because we don't really like that. But, you know, it's there, it works. I just need to find the time to integrate that in Aeon. And the main reason for that being so I can do full disk encryption out of the box. But then it does has led me to the question lately of, like, does full disk encryption really matter for a desktop? Because if you think about it, like, the biggest threat is someone stealing your laptop, and they've just stole your TPM. It's going to unlock anyway, you know. And yes, you can put a passphrase unlock on it, but then it's not a multi-user system at that point, you know. It's, you know, so do we just declare it to be a single-user system? And then if I do, I want to go back and change quite a few of the things I've already done with what I've got. Like, you know, I'll do Flatpak system-wide and, you know, not, you know, isolate things differently, because, like, it would be a fair assumption to make. And yeah, FIDO2 keys are awesome, but then again, you've got to give them to everybody. Maybe the right assumption is declare Aeon a single user desktop OS. Maybe not. I was spending an awful lot of time with systemd homed. Mostly it works. I found some really fun FIDO2 bugs while doing it. Most of the issues getting it working for us have been, you know, SUSE specific ones. You know, we use SE Linux, and there is no SE Linux policy yet for homed, so I'm going to have to write it. Our NSS and PAM config can be made to work, but getting that to all work nicely fresh out of the first image is still making me quite grumpy. And don't see him here, but yes, there's lots of issues with GNOME in particular, but there's more issues with everything else. But, you know, not necessarily got the greatest integration with GNOME yet. So things like GNOME initial setup doesn't show, it doesn't work with homed, so it won't make the user properly. So you've got to then hack around the whole thing afterwards. There's user management in GNOME, doesn't understand homed at all, so it makes regular users, you don't, not homed ones. So any help, advice, contributions in this area, I'm really interested in the topic, but it's not working great at the moment. And there is this other kind of constant open question of, does homed actually make sense in the real world? It's a wonderful model, for sure. You know, having the idea of everybody having their own encrypted home directory. But doing that the proper way, which is as a Lux loopback device, like we've got there by default, means you suddenly then have a massive storage management complication, because you've got to size the bloody thing the whole time. And yeah, overbooking, you know, I do agree with the idea of overbooking like we typically do with home directories is a bad idea, But it's still, you know, a lot of pain to then say, okay, how big is this user's home directory going to be? How big is the next user's home directory going to be? You know, I end up back at that question of, should Aeon just be a single user laptop OS, and then I just forget about the whole thing? Either way, yes or no, still want to have full disk encryption probably in some form, because having it would be better than not having it. Measured and trusted from the first boot. You've heard an awful lot about that again this week, yeah, the last 2 days already, so I won't go that again. But I haven't got a nice, clean story yet for how to be like calculating those PCR values, you know, as part of my image builds, either encrypting on the first boot or encrypting before and then flipping everything around on the first boot. We're extremely interested in doing that, though. So any ideas, any suggestions, please find me. Throw me at random Git projects. I'm more than happy to look at them. With BTRFS, we would love to be using IMA EVM, but it doesn't work with BTRFS. Yeah, would be lovely if we could find a BTRFS developer in the room to fix it. Measures the integrity of the file system and everything within it. So, and yeah, because it, transactional update works very similar to an image-based arrangement. You know, you're kind of, in essence, spinning a fresh image for each sub-volume. You know, we've got most of the benefits people want when they talk about A-B partitioning and A-B updates. It's just A to Z instead. But then there is a package manager. Users can use it. They can mess around with those images and do extra stuff. So working on some tooling really just to sort of analyze those packages. What have people made to the system? I was doing some wonderful fun stuff with BTFS send receive to do that, and then I found a wonderful bug in BTFS send receive where xadders would randomly be applied to the wrong file. So that was scary. But yeah, I want to go back to look at stuff like that and get that working. With Aeon, I want the only way of installing this not to be something like OpenSUSE YAST, but image-based deployments. I have working POCs with that already. They're actually being submitted to OpenSUSE Factory, so OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, the official chain at the moment. They're just sitting for security review at the moment. But this is before systemd boot and before homed and all that stuff, and hasn't got the encryption working yet. So that's the way I'll be wanting to do that as we go forward. And yeah, just faster boot times. You know, I saw that presentation yesterday. You know, I ideally want Aeon to be booting so damn fast that it doesn't matter if you're suspending or hibernating or not, who cares? You know, especially with a reboot-based update system, like the quicker it gets back up, the less of a pain it is for everybody. We will be using soft reboot as well to help with that, of course, as well. So if you want to get involved, unlike lots of other older OpenSUSE projects where it's all like IRC and mailing lists, we're mostly Telegram and Matrix these days because, you know, we're not that old-fashioned. So that's where most of the work happens these days. And actually, those two are bridged, so pick whichever one you want. We're going to find you anyway. We've got our bug list, which is still in Bugzilla because some things are still nice to use. But I've made it as easy as possible to file those bugs because there's a nice reporting wizard in there. And then all the development is happening either in the OpenSUSE build service or as I develop more and more, obviously in GitHub as well, because we're going to need extra tooling for that. So I run through that nice and quickly. We have time for questions. Perfect. I was aiming for 10.
So just a quick comment on the integration of HomeD with GNOME. There is a plan to have somebody working on this.
Yes,
and
I met him yesterday. Yes, okay. I've forgotten. Adrian, there we go. Yeah, he's not in the room, which is a shame. But yeah, everything Adrian does, I'm going to be using if I can.
Right. Congratulations. You have really beautiful users, I think. We saw a couple of slides in between. I wonder about those users. Have you had any feedback of the type of user who would otherwise use something like Chrome OS? So maybe high school students or something. How do they?
Our current user base, it's small and growing because it's a new project, right? But it's an interesting cross section because obviously this doesn't appeal to old graybeard Linux Linux Unix types. But we've got everything from lazy developers like myself who just don't want to be messing with their desktop machine as much, to university students and those types that are technically interested in this stuff, but maybe kind of are scared about all the bells and whistles and knobs that traditional Linux has. So it kind of ends up being like their first introduction, even though the thing is still release candidate stage. Because they can just deploy it and it works, and it doesn't have the extra complications of dual boot support because I don't support it. So they can just put it in a VM or on a laptop and it works. So I know quite a few of our users who then like use it to install for their grandmas and their mums and that kind of thing too. So it's a good cross section, but it's different from, I would say, like the traditional Linux desktop heartland type.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. But these people's mums have not contacted you yet about
not
how
yet.
Their experience was.
No, okay. The bug list is not growing that quickly, but the download list is. So it's doing okay.
How do system services work in the Aeon environment? So this is things like, if I want to have SSHD running so I can remote into my desktop,
yeah,
or maybe WireGuard so I can connect it to a VPN type thing.
Yeah, it works the standard way of any other systemd service. So the way we do our read-only stuff, when we say the root file system, we're basically meaning every part of the BTFS file system that isn't a subvolume. So USR being like the main one, obviously. Well, USR has your configuration already for SSH and WireGuard, etc. Especially in SUSE land, where we typically put as many default configs as we can in USR. So like our SSH config is in USR etc SSH, not anywhere else. And then etc is your usual place for putting your own custom user config. So your service loads up, reads the right config from the right place, where you go. And then all of the
then?
Transactional stuff snapshots the config in wherever to, and then rolls back the config in wherever to. So if you mess something up, you roll back the entire system state, including the config. Yeah, you've got the microphone. You can go again.
I have another one. So is it possible with DistroBox to access the host apps? So for example, if you've got a command line program that generates an image, can you then view it in an image viewer that's on the host system?
You absolutely can. I can't remember the syntax off the top of my head, but yeah, there's a wrapper for that.
So there's special magic syntax, so from within the container you can run
pop out and do stuff. Yeah.
Excellent.
There's another?
That's cool.
There might be another. That's already been answered.
If you read it later, you can always catch me. It's all good.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else?
Okay. I don't understand how DistroBox does things. Do you run into exciting issues if you're editing something, if you're editing a file while you're doing a update of your DistroBoxes, and then you need to roll back and lose the stuff you were editing?
No, luckily not, because the DistroBox is a container running in your home directory, and it's a standard traditional Linux distro. So, it only has the same risk of updating as your typical Linux distro does, but of course it's smaller because there's less stuff in there. So,
I get it. Okay. And
typically speaking, your DistroBox isn't going to be updated unless you type it in. Although, actually, I do have a build of Aeon now where I do also automatically update all your distro boxes some random time during the day. But yeah, there is that risk potentially of, I could end up squishing someone's work. So I'm a bit nervous about that one.
Okay, last one.
Yeah.
Did you get some feedback on the many reboots that your system expects the user to do?
Nope, because it doesn't. It's given that we prompt the user, you know, reboot when you want, you know, you're in control. So when we first started this as the MicroS desktop, yeah, everyone did not like the fact I was rebooting their machine automatically because we started with that. Was not popular. And then we didn't have all the notification tooling, so we went through a couple of months of, you know, people just forgetting to update their machines or forgetting to reboot. Now it's there. A GNOME notification once a day is not exactly stressful.
I would have expected that users don't reboot their machines at all, usually nowadays, just Linux users maybe, you know?
But then if they don't reboot, you know, every day, fine. Like, reboot once a month. It's your risk. It's your desktop. I don't care, and the OS doesn't care, and like with Tumbleweed, like the code base doesn't care. We're used to that. I've known Tumbleweed users who didn't update for like 6 months, and then, you know, they rolled whenever. So, yeah, it's our update stack's comfortable enough that that's not going to be the end of the world. And we're done. Thank you very much.